Hello, and welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast from The Lancet Oncology. It's July 2023, and I'm Senior Editor Owen Stretton. This month, we'll be discussing two papers on BCMA CAR T-cells in relapsed or refractory multiple myeloma, recently published in the journal. First, I talked to Carlos Fernandez del Rey of Hospital Clinic of Barcelona about his single-arm, multicenter, open-label pilot study of an academic BCMA CAR T-cell therapy involving a fractionated initial infusion and a booster dose. Next, I talked to Damien Green of the University of Washington about his phase 1 first-in-human trial of BCMA CAR T-cells in combination with gamma secretase inhibitors. Hi Carlos, thank you for joining me. First, could you introduce your study and describe some of your key findings?
Thank you so much. Our institution has developed two academic CAR T constructs, one directed against CD19, RE1, Vernicel, and another against BCNA, RE2H. From our previous experience treating CD19 malignancies with RE1, we observed how administering the initial dose in a fractionated manner might reduce the severity of immune-related side effects without reducing efficacy. In this study for patients with multiple myeloma using RE2H, the target dose was 3 million of CAR-positive cells per kilogram for the first infusion. The first infusion was split into three administrations of 10, 30, and 60% intravenously on day 0, plus 3, and plus 7, with at least 24 hours between doses in all cases. If adverse events occurred between administrations, remaining doses were adjusted until resolution. No cases of immune effector cell-associated neurotoxicity syndrome, ICANS, or late neurologic events were observed in this study. Cytokine release syndrome, CRS, was observed in 80% of patients, always after receiving at least the second fraction, with no grade 3 or higher. Median time to onset of CRS was 7 days from the first fraction, with a median duration of only 2 days. Tocilizumab was administered in 19 out of 30 of patients, mainly for persistent grade 1 CRS. We attribute the lower incidence of these immune-related side effects, especially severe cases, to the fractionate of the first dose, as previously observed with RE1 in CD19 malignancies. Even other factors, such as construct feature, total cell dose administered, or manufacturing process, might also play an important role in safety. We also evaluated a booster dose of up to 3 million of CAR-positive cells administered in a single intravenous infusion after day 100 in patients with some degree of response and non-limiting side effects after the first dose. This is an approach not previously explored for CAR T cells in multiple myeloma. Lymphodepletion was administered with the same regimen only in patients without CAR T persistent in peripheral blood at that time. This second dose of up to 3 million of CAR-positive cells was also obtained, when possible, initially at the same time that the first dose. The incorporation of a second infusion of RE2H after day 100 of the first administration was supposed to deepen and lengthen responses. In this sense, none of the patients who received the booster dose presented CRS, neurological toxicity, or any adverse events of interest. Patients were rapidly discharged. Therefore, an outpatient or at-home management could be evaluated. Several patients had detectable CAR T relapse, suggesting that CAR T exhaustion with increase on some surface marker, such as PD-1, TIGIT, or LAG-3, could play a role in shortening duration of responses in our studies, as well as in previous CAR T cell trials. The administration of fresh CAR T 3-4 months after the infusion may add non-exhausted cells to the patient without additional toxicities.
Could you describe how patients responded to treatment? How do you think the dosing approach contributed to the responses you observed?
We treated 35 patients in this trial, but only 30 patients underwent leukapheresis and two multiple myeloma progression. At the end, 30 patients received RE2H due to these two additional myeloma progression and one infection death before final product. After a median follow-up of 18 months, overall response rate was 100%, with 76% of complete response, 27% of VGPR, very good partial response, and 7% of partial response. Median time to best response was 3.3 months. However, some patients still improved response after month 3. Of the efficacy, median duration of response, and overall survival were not reached in this study. A median progression-free survival was 14.5 months. Median duration of response in patients who achieved a complete remission versus less than complete remission was not reached versus 9.6 months, with an overall response rate at 12 months of 86.5%. One of the points in this trial also was the treatment of patients with soft tissue involvement in the form of plasmacytoma. That remains an highly unmet need since available treatments have poor efficacy. 47% of patients have plasmacytoma at the PET-CT performed an inclusion, with 20% presenting a true extramedullary non-paraskeletal location. A PET-CT was planned at day 100, showing a metabolic response in 13 of 14 patients. No difference in terms of progression-free survival or overall survival were detected according to the presence or absence of plasmacytoma and inclusion. About fractioning due to cytokine release syndrome, a clinical decision was made that 5 patients will not receive the third fraction of the first dose. There were no differences in response rates of progression-free survival between these 5 patients who received only the first 2 fractions compared to those receiving the full dose. We think that this patient developed an early CRS because probably that reflects a faster in vivo expansion of the CAR-T, which may explain the similar outcome. About the booster, 20 patients received this second dose. 14 of 24 patients already had a stringent complete remission prior to reinfusion. 6 of 24 patients maintained the response, now were all very good partial response. And in 4 of 24 patients, the response improved after the booster dose. 2 patients from very good partial response to complete remission and 2 from partial response to complete remission. Since there is no comparison group, we cannot fear that these results are only due to the second infusion. In other BCMA CAR T cells, a deepening of response over time has been also reported. The feasibility in terms of manufacturing, the potential benefit in response death, and in the absence of related side effects warrant further investigation of this approach.
Finally, what do you think are the broad implications of the study? What do you think is the future for academic CAR T cells?
Our trial was a pivotal single-arm open-label study and was conducted in 5 academic centers in Spain. This is the first academic trial to get clinical results for patients with multiple myeloma in Europe. RE2H is an academic CAR-T that has been manufactured, in fact, in 2 facilities in Spain, being a real point-of-care manufacturing approach in these centers. With this result, a second cohort of 30 patients has been already recruited in 7 centers of Spain. And a compassionate use program is active for treating patients. With that, more than 70 patients have been treated with this product right now in one country. This strategy can increase the number of slots available for production, allowing a fast release when the clinical situation of the patient requires as short as 19 days. The high cost, the manufacturing delays, and the potential bottlenecks of centralized industry-driven CAR-T production may limit access to this therapy, as it has been shown in several countries. This coexists with an exponential increase in demand that will probably continue growing due to the potential introduction to early lines of treatment for patients with multiple myeloma and CAR T cells and other diseases. In addition, despite the European Commission authorization for the CAR T against BCMA for multiple myeloma, such as IDECEL and CILTACEL, the products are not available in Spain and in many other European countries because there is no reimbursement agreement. Initiatives to enhance clinical trial activity and comparisons across Europe are needed, and several institutions are planning strategies to facilitate this and to move towards centralized authorizations of academic products for hematological malignancies. R2H can be manufactured at up to one-fourth of the cost of commercial CAR-Ts. For only reasons, we believe that academic CAR-Ts will become essential to improve access to this advanced therapy around the world for patients with multiple myeloma.
Hi, Damien. Thank you for talking to me today. First of all, could you explain the rationale behind your study and how the combination of gamma secretase inhibitors and BCMA CAR T cells might enhance anti-tumor activity?
Sure, absolutely. And thank you so much for asking me to speak about what we consider to be a very exciting topic. So as I think is probably well known to the audience, there's really been a revolution in terms of targeting and antigen targeting and immunotherapy in general for plasma cell dyscrasias. And in particular, BCMA, B-cell maturation antigen, has proven to be a target of interest and for good reason. There's been a lot of excitement about this targeting. In fact, at least CAR T-cell therapeutics as well as other therapeutics have been approved in the United States by the Food and Drug Administration based on some very promising efficacy signals. Unfortunately, however, what we're not yet seeing at least reliably is any opportunity to really cure this disease. Multiple myeloma remains an incurable plasma cell dyscrasia. And so while we were very encouraged by the early promise of BCMA targeting, we were also interested in finding ways through which we could potentially enhance efficacy. And one putative mechanism of escape, perhaps tumor cell escape, and also potentially an approach that could improve our capacity to effectively target, ideally, every one of the malignant plasma cells, would be to increase the surface density or target density of the BCMA on those myeloma cells. So we actually published in Blood a few years ago our findings demonstrating in preclinical models that we could effectively increase BCMA target density through the use of a gamma secretase inhibitor, and the gamma secretase complex is a enzymatic protease complex, and gamma secretase is involved in the cleavage of BCMA from the cell surface. And there were a class of drugs developed, and actually largely studied in the Alzheimer's space, but also in some cancer diagnoses. But the gamma secretase inhibitors are designed to inhibit the function of that enzyme. We felt that we could repurpose that so that we could prevent cleavage of BCMA from the surface of malignant plasma cells, and thereby increase their density reliably on those cells and hopefully improve targeting in that way. Now, a secondary benefit is also a reduction in soluble BCMA, because when the BCMA is cleaved from the cell surface, that results in increases in soluble levels of BCMA that some feel could act, at least in some circumstances, as a decoy that might throw a targeting therapy off the scent if you will, away from the target. But be that as it may, the most important finding, I think, was that we could, in preclinical models, demonstrate that we were able to significantly increase the surface density of BCMA on those target myeloma cells. And it was with that in mind that we proceeded to move forward with a clinical trial, a phase one trial, that is the subject of today's discussion. And in that trial, we're seeking to explore really the first foray into a first-in-human trial in which we would combine a gamma secretase inhibitor with a BCMA targeting strategy, namely a BCMA CAR T cell therapeutic, for the purpose of enhancing efficacy. So that, you know, the fundamental rationale behind performing the study was really to combine this small molecule with a BCMA targeting agent for the purpose of enhancing the efficacy of that agent, with the goal of trying to eliminate as many of the malignant cells as possible, ideally all of them. And in particular, perhaps going after, because there's a relatively broad spectrum with respect to the density of the BCMA antigen on malignant plasma cells, to hopefully bring up that density somewhat uniformly on the target cells so that there weren't any escapees who could avoid the therapy through expressing lower levels of surface antigen.
What were your key findings? How do you think the introduction of a gamma secretase inhibitor contributed to outcomes?
Yeah, so, you know, first and foremost, I think it's important to point out that this was a phase one trial designed to assess the safety of the combination, because no one had previously given combination BCMA-targeted therapy with a gamma secretase inhibitor. So we were quite cautious in the way in which we designed this study, really from two perspectives. First, we actually gave the gamma secretase inhibitor first during a run-in phase, just three doses of the agent. I'll talk about that more in a moment. That was really to assess the monotherapy, if you will, efficacy of the agent, but also to make sure that it was safe to give for this population. And only then, subsequently, once we had generated the CAR T cell product, did we start the gamma secretase inhibitor again. And it was initiated on day one of the CAR T cell infusion. And so, you know, I guess I'd break down our findings into sort of two categories. The first being during that run-in phase that I mentioned. This was after patients underwent their leukapheresis for the purpose of generating the CAR T cell product. Then during the waiting period, while we're waiting for the product to be generated, patients received administration of the oral gamma secretase inhibitor, just three doses over a five-day period, so 2 days apart, essentially. And then following that that third dose, within hours of the third dose of the gamma secretase inhibitor, which again is taken as an oral pill, we assessed the bone marrow in those patients and compared the bone marrow findings, and specifically looking at the plasma cells and the BCMA density on those plasma cells, to the levels that were present prior to patients receiving the gamma secretase inhibitor, or their baseline levels, if you will. And we found that administration of those three doses was safe. We didn't see any complications with that. But beyond that, we also demonstrated a median increase that was 12 times baseline of the BCMA after three doses were administered, and up to, in fact, 156-fold or 156 times higher level from baseline after the three doses of the gamma secretase inhibitor. So we saw that as an encouraging finding in vivo, in patient demonstration, that the oral administration of this drug could quite quickly result in significant increases in the surface density of the target we're going after with the CAR T cells. And then, so that's sort of looking at the first element of the study. Of course, the second element of the study is looking at the combination of the BCMA-targeted CAR T cell with the gamma secretase inhibitor, or GSI, combined administration. Now, we were quite cautious there, too, in terms of the duration of treatment with the gamma secretase inhibitor. So patients received a total, received the agent for a total of 3 weeks. The dosing strategy there was basically that patients received the treatment 3 times a week for a 3 week period of time, and then it was stopped. And that dosing approach was really selected because this is a first in human trial, and in order to receive approval, at least in the United States, from the FDA, from regulatory bodies, we were relatively conservative in our dosing strategy. And I think, you know, in what we found there, first of all, this was a dose escalation study with respect to the CAR T cells. So we looked at 4 different CAR T cell doses, escalating doses of the CAR Ts while maintaining a fixed dose of the gamma secretase inhibitor. So what we found, first of all, was that the combination was safe, that patients tolerated it relatively well. We did not actually reach a stopping dose, if you will. We got up to our maximal dose of the CAR T cells, and this was a flat dosing strategy. So the doses started at 50 times 10 to the 6 flat dose of CAR T cells, and we escalated up to 450, which is where we stopped, just because this trial was designed to include a total of 18 patients, and based on funding and study design, we stopped after 18 patients were treated. So in terms of our findings otherwise, you know, I think it's important to point out that the population of patients on this study really had quite aggressive disease. We had relatively broad inclusion criteria for the study in terms of allowing patients on, even if they had somewhat compromised renal function. We also allowed patients on the study if they had received prior not only autologous stem cell transplant, which is quite common, but also prior allogeneic stem cell transplant. Beyond that, at least at the time, other studies were not allowing patients who had received BCMA-targeted, prior BCMA-targeted therapeutics onto trials studying BCMA CAR T cells. We did not have that stipulation, so we allowed patients who had previously been exposed to a BCMA targeting agent, either CAR T cell, antibody drug conjugate, or any other form of BCMA targeted treatment onto our study. In fact, a total of 7 of the 18 patients who were on the trial had received prior BCMA targeted therapy. And I'll mention in a moment why I think that was important. But generally speaking, these were all patients who had really what I think is fair to say was relatively aggressive disease. 72% of them had at least one high-risk multiple myeloma feature at diagnosis, and 28% of them had more than one high-risk feature, which we know really portends, unfortunately, quite a dire prognosis for these patients. 67% of them required what we call bridging therapy, or treatment between the time that they had their T cells collected to generate the CAR T cell product and when the cells were administered back to the patients. But only 18% of them had a documented response to that treatment. So relatively resistant disease to therapy, at least by that measure. Why I think it's important to really call out the two populations, those who were previously BCMA exposed, or at least exposed to other BCMA targeting approaches, and those who were not, is because we saw quite dramatic differences in terms of responsiveness. Now, I have to say this is a phase one safety study, and it's very important to make that point, because while we looked at secondary endpoints around efficacy, the primary endpoint was to evaluate the safety of the combination. And the numbers are relatively small to look at efficacy endpoints. Nonetheless, we found that amongst the patients who were previously not exposed, so no prior exposure to a BCMA targeting agent. The progression-free survival was quite encouraging at almost 29 months, 28.8 months, and overall survival was 42 months, which stood in relatively stark contrast to the patients who previously had received BCMA targeting therapy, where the progression-free survival was only 2.6 months and overall survival was 6.8 months. And in some ways, I think it's important to look at those groups separately, because the former group, the patients who had not seen prior BCMA-targeted therapy, is really more analogous to populations that have been looked at in other trials which excluded such patients. And again, I'm hesitant to encourage too much of a comparison in a phase one study with a relatively small number of patients across trials. But that said, if one were going to do that, at least to any degree, I think it's probably most relevant to look at the patients who are not previously BCMA exposed to understand the potential benefits of the GSI in that setting. And there we think that the results are quite encouraging with respect to the progression-free survival and overall survival, albeit in a relatively small number of patients at this juncture. Now, in terms of their, safety profile otherwise, we monitored the patients for cytokine release syndrome, as one would expect, using the ASTCT criteria, which we actually retrospectively applied because those criteria came out after our study was started. But 50% of the patients on the study had grade 1 cytokine release syndrome, 33% grade 2, and 6% had grade 3, another 6% grade 4. 61% of the patients were treated with tocilizumab, and those patients received either one or two doses of tocilizumab, and 66% received dexamethasone. So again, the safety signal from the perspective of cytokine release syndrome really looks pretty good. We also monitored the patients for neurotoxicity using the immune effector cell-associated neurotoxicity syndrome scale, and there we documented what is termed ICANS in 7 patients, or 39%. Two of those patients had grade 1, 3 had grade 2, and 1 had grade 3 and 1 grade 4. All but one of the patients fully recovered after a relatively short interval of any symptoms associated with neurotoxicity. So ultimately, our feeling is that the findings from this study, the key findings are really that the combination is safe, that gamma secretase inhibitor administered as a monotherapy alone during that run-in period could result in significant increases in the surface density of BCMA, and that there appears to be a signal in terms of efficacy, but that really needs to be explored further in larger and in randomized studies comparing patients receiving combination of GSI with a BCMA-targeted therapy against patients not receiving the gamma secretase inhibitor. But the early findings we feel are really quite promising with respect to potential benefit from the combination.
So, if the combination goes on to show benefit and efficacy in later phase studies and large populations, what do you think the implications will be? Do you see combination therapies becoming more common in the future as a method for improving the efficacy of BCMA CAR T cells?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And the answer is yes, I do. I think that combinatorial strategies are really going to be very important in this space. And again, I want to point out that our dosing strategy is probably not the optimal dosing strategy for administration of the gamma secretase inhibitor. It's one we selected from a safety perspective to demonstrate first and foremost that this was tolerable, but not necessarily optimized in terms of duration or timing. So I think there is a important space to be explored there with respect to optimization. But beyond that, based on what we've seen, I think there definitely is a promising avenue forward for such combinatorial strategies. And in fact, it's not just conjecture when I say that. because we already know that other groups using BCMA targeting strategies have begun to incorporate gamma secretase inhibitors into those into studying those agents, including recent data that was that has been presented on the combination with a gamma secretase inhibitor and a bispecific T-cell engager, as well as data that's been at least presented at national or international meetings combining a gamma secretase inhibitor with the antibody drug conjugate belantamab mafodotin. Without getting into the details of those studies, it looks like there's suggestion of early promise with that combinatorial strategy, which is gratifying to us and just further supports the notion that the use of a small molecule to increase the surface density of the target can be an effective strategy. I think it can be an effective strategy not only for the obvious reason that one simply improves the density on the target and therefore makes it more easily identifiable, if you will, to the therapeutic, but also because it may allow for reducing the dose of the paired therapeutic agent, the suggestion being that perhaps less of that agent and hopefully less toxicity from that agent is possible if one increases consistently the density of the target that's being got after, if you will, by that therapeutic. So in this case, BCMA, but I would also point out that I think beyond this strategy, the approach that we're demonstrating could also potentially be employed in other targeting strategies, and efforts are ongoing both from my group and elsewhere to look at other ways in which one could exploit this benefit by increasing the density of any number of target antigens with small molecules or other agents for the purpose of then targeting them more effectively and hopefully reducing tumor escape through antigen loss variant. So yeah, we definitely see this as being promising, and I think the implications of our study for future exploration include both looking at improved dosing strategies for how, in this particular case, the gamma secretase inhibitor could be dosed, but beyond that, also into exploring other combinatorial strategies between small molecules to enhance antigen density and the therapeutics that target those antigens.
You can read both articles online now at thelancet.com. Thank you to Drs. Fernandez, De La Rea, and Green, and thank you for listening. You can subscribe to In Conversation with The Lancet Oncology wherever you usually get your podcasts.